Were you trying to get crazy with this, eh? Don't you know I'm loco? Loco?
We're back here on 560 WQAM. Welcome to the 8 o'clock hour. Greg Likens alongside Adam Beasley. Danny G, the sports bomber, playing the hits on the other side of the glass. We'll take you up another couple of hours till 10 o'clock. That's when we'll turn things over to CBS Sports Radio. Hope everybody is having a great Tuesday night, as we've been getting into a number of different topics and having fun. If you want to join us via the text line, you can. Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line is 560-22. 560-22 is how you reach us. Before we talk some more football, and we're going to get back to what Bees was discussing, I do like, you know, there's a lot of people who don't like the Celtics. So we got somebody
says, good.
Horford isn't worth what he's asking. Somebody else says, screw Boston, the Heat will own their butts next season.
I love the Greg Likens voice when he's reading these texts. It's like a dramatic reading. It's like the book on tape of Greg Likens reading tweets.
Heat Nation has faith in Godfather Riley.
I mean, that's incredible, man. Yeah. You could go into a career just doing this, reading people's texts.
Our texter says he will have them competing for a title within 2 years. So,
The Miami Heat?
Yes.
They're not in the D-League, are they?
Hey, man, I'm telling you.
Is it the D-League store or is the G-League?
Now it's the G-League.
The G-League, yeah.
Which I love the fact that they inherited the G-League name because Gatorade is the sponsor.
Yeah, that's great.
That's awesome.
Hey,
right?
Was it Bazley, that Syracuse recruit that went
Bazley,
out?
Yeah.
Bazley? Is he going to get drafted?
I've seen him projected. So what's funny, most of the projections have him in the second round. And then I happened to look, Tim Reynolds has come up quite a bit so far on the show because he had this on Whiteside nugget that he's going to ask for a trade potentially, which you heard Danny talk about in the update there. But he also was part of like an NBA writer's mock draft that I think the LA Times had put together. And he picked Darius Bazley as the selection for the Heat at number 13.
What?
And that blew my mind. I was like, if that actually happens, and I am working our simulcast, 560 and 790 simulcast on Thursday night with Zach Duarte, our NBA draft coverage. If that happens, I'm going to have a difficult time saying anything good about that guy.
Explain why.
Well, yeah. So for those who don't know, Darius Bazley committed to Syracuse and was a McDonald's All-American and played in the McDonald's All-American game and talked about how he was
probably their best recruit in the last 5 years, would you say?
Right. He was excited about going to play for Jim Boeheim in Syracuse and all this stuff. And then at the last moment, before actually signing his letter of intent, he said, no, I decided I'm switching my mind and I'm going to play in the G League instead. And I'm going to blaze a new trail that nobody has done before. And I'm going to play in the G League and all this other stuff. And so, like, if that's what he wanted to do, then fine. I mean, we as fans, we can be frustrated by it. And I don't want to be that guy that's taking out my frustrations on, like, an 18-year-old kid.
Right. There is that aspect.
There is. So, like, you know, I'll be fair because I criticize some of our you know, fans out there in the audience who may go to these message boards or go on social media and find the accounts of these kids.
You just do it to me via text.
Yeah, we can do that behind the scenes, right? But here's the deal. Like, he decided to skip out on the college experience. Fine. He said he was going to go to the G League. He didn't end up going to the G League. He actually just sat out for a year and didn't play any basketball, and that's the part that blew my mind. Like, if you're not going to go to college, go over to Australia, like some of these guys, like RJ Hampton decided to do, LaMelo Ball has now decided to do, go play in Europe like other players have decided to do, or just play in the G League. Instead, he doesn't. He hired Rich Paul as his agent, and Rich Paul got him what they described as a paid internship through Nike, and I think he made like $50,000.
That's incredible.
In the season he was off.
And that internship was work out every day, basically.
And now he is, you know, entering the NBA draft. But like, that's the thing with this kid in particular, I just don't understand. Nobody knows who he is. Had he gone to college, you know, Zion
made
Williamson,
a Final Four run with Syracuse.
Right. Like, Zion Williamson was going to be a star no matter what. But the fact that he went to Duke and played college basketball, the moment he declared for the draft, you had sponsors lining up because they had already seen what he can do on the college level. They already saw the television ratings. They knew he was going to be a star. And so for those who criticize the college experience, I get it. It's unfair. The players should get paid, at least for their likeness. I'm not denying that. But for those who say, oh, they should just go do something else, it's like there is some worth and value in them playing high-level college basketball
is.
Because of all the exposure.
And they become better players, too.
Yes.
Not just the exposure, but you have real coaching. Like, Krzyzewski's staff is a really good staff.
Mm-hmm.
Boeheim's got a good staff. There are high-level college basketball programs here that will make you a better player, and maybe even if he goes 13, which I can't believe that's going to happen.
I don't think so either.
But even if he does, he may have cost himself $10 to $15 million in guaranteed money for not being the number three pick in the draft, which he could have been if he went, you know, was a star at Syracuse.
Right. And most of the projections have him going in the second round. Mm-hmm. So he's definitely losing out on money.
Who gets drafted first? Baisley, that's how you say it?
I believe it's Darius Baisley.
I've never said it out loud before.
I believe so. Yes.
Or the actual Syracuse players in the draft.
Darius Baisley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That hurts, doesn't it?
So O'Shea Brissett or Tyus Battle.
Yeah, we're not going to make this a Syracuse show, but it's going to be rough next year, bro.
You know what? I don't know. I am the eternal optimist. So they have a very good backcourt.
Yes,
but Joe Girard,
which just
the savior,
amazing, which just so happened to coincide with the year they moved the 3-point arc back.
Hey man, I think Syracuse is ready for it.
They can shoot from 40
again. Hey, so I interrupted your thought at the end of the last hour.
It wasn't a good one,
but you were going to bring up the Dolphins draft history. And
oh no, the point I was making was this: is that if you have, there are very few players in the NFL that are transformational players. And a can't miss quarterback is the top of that list. There are very few players aside from quarterbacks that are transformational players. But if you have a chance to get one of those, and it takes 3-4 number one picks to do so, do it. Do it, because what are you giving up? I mean, Tunsil's a fine player. Don't get me wrong. He's a good player. He's a good building block. They're better because they have Laramie Tunsil. But their other first-round picks, Charles Harris, take or leave him. Devontae Parker, they almost left him. Mm-hmm. And even Minka. I would trade those four players for any of the top five quarterbacks in the league, and I think basically any general manager would do that. So these teams that covet these first-round picks in the NFL so much aren't seeing the forest for the trees. Now, you take that point and you extrapolate to the NBA, where first-round picks are so much more devalued. Like, if you don't have a top two or three pick, you're getting a rotational player if you're lucky, right? Or if you hit lightning in a bottle, you get Steph Curry. But that's... how many times does that happen? Mm-hmm. Not very often. I guess Kawhi was outside the top five, right?
Yeah, he was the 15th pick. Yeah,
but there's one or two of those guys a draft.
And the Raptors as a team didn't have any lottery picks on their roster.
How about that?
Yeah.
So, but by and large, maybe one if not two really good players come out of the top two or three every year. And that's it. And so you talk about the NFL being the ultimate crapshoot. The NBA makes it look like a sure thing. And if you can give up four of those, is that what they gave up, three and they swapped two other picks? Is that what essentially what it was?
The Lakers deal?
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. It's a no-brainer. Because what they have the number...
Which, by the way, as you say that, mm-hmm. Adrian Wojnarowski has...
By the way, congrats on being able to pronounce his name.
I met him out in L.A.
Yeah, I saw
summer.
The picture.
Yeah, he was a really good guy. He says the Lakers are trying to expand Anthony Davis' trade and create ability to open max salary slot on July 6th. Sources tell Bobby Marks and me, Lakers offering contracts of Mo Wagner, Jamario Jones, and Isaac Bonga to additional teams so L.A. can satisfy CBA rules of creating $32 million in cap space. He also says Lakers are aggressively pursuing the purchase of second-round picks in Thursday's NBA Draft 2. Those picks will offer two important things for L.A., acquisition of inexpensive labor and ability to exceed the salary cap with those minimum contracts.
Oh, because they just need to fill out the roster.
Yes.
They need 15 dudes.
Yes.
And right now they have three?
Technically they have like five or six, but yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Three that matter.
It's amazing that you have three real players on your team, and you're the favorite to win the finals.
They're the odds-on favorite right now.
That's bananas.
Yeah. So, but your point is, for these NFL teams, they need to figure out, like, you know, especially at the position of quarterback, mm-hmm. that's the position that you can make the comparison to, like, an NBA superstar,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, they've got all the power. They're so important. So if you get one of those superstars in the NBA, suddenly you're relevant.
Right.
And it opens up so many other options. And in the NFL, if you have a quarterback that is...
top five, top 10.
Yeah. Depending on where you would go, top five or top 10, then suddenly all these options are available to you as far as what you can do on the field,
right,
and the success you can have.
Yeah, and I would liken AD to one of those top five, top 10 quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Lakers are going to be really good. They're just going to have a lot of really bad players on their team. Like, they'll be more top-heavy, I think, than the Heat were.
it feels that way because the Heat, I mean, to the credit of LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, they each took little less than the max that they could.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed the Heat to re-sign Udonis Haslem, who, by the way, took a lesser contract with the Heat than he could have gotten, especially from the Denver Nuggets. They were offering him a lot more money. That also allowed them to get Shane Battier and Mike Miller and
Ray Allen.
Yeah, and then eventually Ray Allen a couple years later. So that allowed them a lot of flexibility. And that's the one thing I talked about this last night because I was on for a couple of hours. Like, LeBron James is a player of all the players in the NBA that I would argue, and this will sound crazy, but within the context of the league, that he's underpaid.
Yeah, no, of course.
He's making $40 million.
Of course he's underpaid.
Whatever, but he brings so much value to this league that it's only because of the salary cap restrictions. Otherwise, if they weren't, he'd be worth so much more money.
Oh, somebody would pay him $100 million.
Yes, and I think it'd be worth it because of everything involved in that brand and what he brings to the table. But with that being said, knowing all of the money he makes away from basketball, I wonder if he regrets taking a max contract with the Lakers in the sense that, you know, he's in his mid-30s now. Let me just bear with me for a second.
I know where you're going.
Because, like, if he gives back a few million dollars per year, what other players could they add to the equation now that Anthony Davis is in the fold?
And the question is, would he rather be Michael Jordan or would he rather be Warren Buffett? And in his mind, I've taken less for so long, and I don't know, and this could sound blasphemous, but I don't know if his number one priority in LA is winning.
Well, I think a lot of people jumped to that conclusion after this last season because it felt like, hey, he's already in retirement mode. It was a lost season. He's got his production company there, all these other business interests in LA, and so he set himself and his family up for post-NBA life. But now that Anthony Davis is in the mix, it's like one move can suddenly change the perception.
Oh, I'm not doubting he's going to go for a title this year, but I think he's good with his career.
I would agree with that. I think he feels very confident in what he's accomplished.
Yeah, he knows that for the MJ lovers, and I know we're sitting next to one here.
There you go.
There's nothing that he can do to surpass MJ. There isn't. So is he going to go out and play 75, 78 games and grind and another 20, it feels like 25 in the playoffs or how many it is? I mean, he's played over 100 games how many times in his career?
How about this? Because I jotted this down and I have this here. So let me pull this up so I can utilize the research that I did. But LeBron James, over the course of the 8 seasons that he went to 8 consecutive NBA finals. So from like the 2010-11 season until last season, he played an extra 168 games, all the postseason, 168 postseason games over the 8-year span from 2011 to 2018.
So 2 more years are on his body.
Yes.
He ain't about that grind life right now. He's going to be in the ultimate Dwayne Wade maintenance program this year. He's going to probably play 50, 55 games, especially if they get a number 3 or maybe even a number 2 if the player they signs, if they can get Kawhi or something, because I think Kawhi is a better player than Anthony Davis. But he'll be all about the playoffs, and that will be his chance to cement his legacy. Now, can they flip the switch like that? Is he going to need a good 2 months of playing with these guys to get them clicking? Probably. But 2 months isn't 8 months, and that's what the NBA playoffs – I mean, it's the NBA season is if you go all the way to the finals. It's 8-9 months. It's
right.
So long. So, no, I think he's over the moon for the fact that they have another window now. But he ain't taking any less money. He's just not.
No, and I am with you, but I just, you know, that was a thought that crossed my mind when you consider that Woj tweeted about it, but that July 6th, the consummation of the deal July 6th means that they only have somewhere around $23 million to spend on a free agent. If they waited to make the deal official July 30th, then they would be able to have $32 million in cap space.
Well, the Pelicans, do they have any incentive to wait?
No. No incentive to wait. That's why the Pelicans want to get the deal done as quickly as possible.
Right.
6 is the first day they can do it. It just doesn't work to the benefit of the Lakers if they're trying to expand their possibilities.
Right. And again, this point I was making, the NBA is not in the business of doing LeBron James favors. He's not. They're not like other teams. I'm not talking about the league. I'm talking
Correct.
About the other teams. They have a competitive interest not to do so. And B, the dude's won a lot of games. And you're going to help him win more? No. So, what was that? I feel like the Kevin Love trade when LeBron went back to Cleveland was one of those situations that it took forever. They agreed to it, and it took forever for it to get done because of all the NBA CBA to me is like how their business works makes no sense.
I saw somebody tweeted about this yesterday or the day before, and it was sarcastic, but it was true. Somebody tweeted out that, hey, there's only like 10 people in the world that don't work for NBA teams that actually understand the logistics of like the CBA as well as the salary caps and all the like, specific rules relating to the NBA.
Well, the idea that you can add an entire year to a dude's contract just because he's on your team and nobody else can do that, what kind of sense does that make?
Well, trying to keep people at home and incentivize.
Okay,
them
and that's
to stay,
and that's yes. How you end up teams going $100 million over the luxury tax because mm-hmm. they keep their nucleus and they smoke the salary cap. I mean, my idea is, it would have broken up the Warriors years ago, which would have been awesome in my I think you agree with that.
Yeah.
But my idea is let everyone have an even playing field, and the way the NBA is created now. And say your salary cap is what is the NBA salary cap these days?
Well, I believe what they've projected the salary cap to be for the upcoming season is like $109 million. Okay. But the Heat, for example, are trying to get down under 132, which is the luxury tax threshold.
Right.
So basically, you can spend up to 132
if it's only your own guys.
Yes.
Make it 132 for everybody then, and if you want to spend 120 of that on LeBron James, do it. And if you can make it work, building a team around him, awesome. No, seriously.
Right.
Like I don't think that any player should be told, no, you have to earn the same as everybody else, even though you're far better than that other player. I mean, that's crazy to me. So I think they've gotten way too cute trying to keep teams – and it was the Bird rule, right? It was mm-hmm. Trying to make sure that a guy who is an icon in your city that's done great things for you – doesn't get priced out for you keeping them. And I understand that. That shouldn't be the NBA's number one responsibility. The NBA's number one responsibility is to, make the game good, obviously, and make it competitively balanced. And I don't think those rules lead to competitive balance because if you hit on, two or three draft picks, you can spend $250 million to keep them. If your owner is worth $10 billion, doesn't care, writing huge checks every year. That to me is not fair to the other 29 teams in the league.
Well, this is what they're dealing with right now until it changes. I think you make some good points. But this is one of these situations where, like the Warriors, for example, they're going to keep spending on their own guys, assuming Kevin Durant, if they can.
They have no other choice.
That's why, like, next year, they're going to have Steph Curry, Draymond Green, maybe Andre Iguodala, and, like, I don't know who else is going to be on that team.
Right.
I mean, they'll have some young guys, obviously, but, because they're going to be maxed out to the.
Assuming Durant resigns.
Assuming, yes. Hey, Bees, let's take a timeout. We're going to come back. We teased the Dolphins conversation, mm-hmm. and we did not get around to it, obviously.
Basketball's so much more fun this summer.
You'd rather talk basketball?
Well, we'll talk some football.
We will, because you're here. I want to utilize your knowledge being here in studio.
As opposed to me just talking to my butt when it comes to the NBA, which is fair. Which is completely fair.
No. But I do want to get your thoughts on what we saw transpire in the offseason workout program, the Dolphins, how it'll translate to next season. So we'll get to that, I think, when we come back. Radio.com. We're back here on 560 WQAM. Greg Likens alongside Adam Beasley. Hope everybody's doing well out there. Danny G, the Sports Bomber, with us as well. Playing some more Snoop Dogg. We still haven't gotten the LBC final answer on that one.
This is one of my favorite Snoop songs.
I agree.
That's a good one.
You know what's funny is, so like during the commercial breaks, we have our own version of a talk show about a number of things. Oftentimes it relates back to Syracuse University, but I was telling you a story earlier about a project I did for one of my classes.
Mm-hmm.
Another project I did for one of my classes is that, taking journalism, I had a number of different like TV classes. So we had to put together video packages and edit them and shoot them and all this stuff. And so I did a preview of the fact that Snoop Dogg was going to be coming to campus.
Oh, that's great.
So I
did you get an interview with Snoop?
No, but I included clips of that video of Drop It Like It's Hot.
Oh, there. You had to pay the royalties then.
Well, somehow we got away with it. I guess because nobody was going to see it outside of the classroom.
I don't know, right?
But, had a little gnat drop in the middle of the package there?
Oh, yeah. I was playing that music and everything. I got one of my buddies. I interviewed him, and I just claimed he was a big Snoop Dogg fan.
A lot of your journalism work is just friends picking up your slack.
In college, that's exactly what it was. Yeah.
I kind of like this radio show.
Right, you're right. Bees, I haven't changed after all these years. That's what happens. I just call my friends, like, hey, you want to be in this package for a class? Or, hey, you want to be on the radio show tonight? You know,
I've been out of school for 18 years now.
18 years. For me, it's been 13. Yeah.
See, I always think of you as right out of college. And it's been 13 years.
06, man. Yeah.
We never overlapped.
We did not.
We were like Travis Benjamin and Michael Badgley. We never overlapped.
There we go. Well, and not to rub it in, but you just missed out on the national championship.
I missed the Final Four in the front end too.
Oh yeah.
I was there 97 through 01.
Oh, you did. You got to see McNabb though.
I did.
Yeah. So that I did. I think that makes up for it.
It was awesome.
That was.
I mean, think about God. We're not making this a Syracuse Sports Talk radio show, but. That team was loaded late 90s, early 2000s, man. Loaded.
Dwight Freeney on those teams, right?
Would you, speaking of Donovan McNabb, so that we can kind of transition back to the NFL here, mm-hmm. I honestly think he's a Hall of Fame snub, if you ask me. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league for a number of years. He had his team competitive. Like, I'm sorry, I know he had the one moment in the Super Bowl where everybody's going to hang his entire career on, but you're talking about a multi-year Pro Bowler, a guy who took a team to the NFC Championship game, how many teams? Five times in a row?
Yeah.
With teams with, like, Todd Pinkston being his best wide receiver. I mean, come on. I mean, let's get Donovan McNabb in the HOF.
And he was one of the quarterbacks who was able to, great running quarterback, but was still great in the pocket. Right, so he found that balance where he was
correct.
Really mobile and productive, but he also was able to stay pretty durable during the heyday of his career, and has incredible rushing numbers in addition to his passing numbers. Listen, I'm biased. I'm sure you're biased to a certain degree as well. So I agree with you, Danny. I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. I think the issue right now that I don't like is the fact that he's like coming out and talking about his candidacy as compared to just letting it happen. But I don't know.
Well, he feels like he's got to rattle the cages a little bit. If I were a voter, I would vote no.
Would you?
I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I think he's a very good player. But here's my criteria for the Hall of Fame: either over the course of your career, you are one of the two or three best players at your position, or one year you're the best player in the entire league, right? That's what you've got to be. You've got to either have a track. You need a track record of longevity either way. You can't be a one-year wonder, but I see Kurt Warner as a much better Hall of Fame candidate.
Oh, I disagree completely. Completely.
I mean, the dude was by far the best player in the league for 3 years, man. By far.
No.
Kurt Warner is
no.
Absolutely the best player in the league.
Absolutely not. I disagree completely. Kurt Warner is a guy who was propped up by his offensive staff.
Stop,
and if you look at his career, he played for 10 years. He had 5 good years with the greatest show on turf and Anquan Boldin and Larry Fitzgerald. Then you put him on a subpar team with the Giants, and all of a sudden he can't hold it together.
And I would agree with you. If it wasn't for the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, he was a couple of throws away from being another champion with the Arizona Cardinals.
But again, look at the skill position players. You had Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin at their peak.
Okay,
man.
Are you going to make the same argument against Peyton Manning because he played with great players? You shouldn't take him. He's still making the throws, man. He's still making the throws.
You can't make that argument with Peyton Manning because Peyton Manning played with a lot of different skill position players throughout the years and was always good. He never had like a downfall in his career where he was like, oh well.
I mean, he was out of the league for like 2 years, man. He had a broken neck or something.
Yeah,
so
one thing is being injured, another thing is being able and active to play. Remember when he left St. Louis? He left St. Louis because he was fumbling all over the place, throwing interceptions. His turnover ratio was nuts, and he had to be benched for Mark Bulger.
Well, but here's the thing. I mean, he was excellent for the stretch in
the
St.
very
Louis.
Best, right. Not excellent, the very best. He had he shattered records.
Right.
Like he shattered records. It wasn't like he broke them. He shattered them.
Listen, and I'm not saying Kurt Warner's not a Hall of Famer. He had those 3 years where he was good.
Okay? He wasn't good. He was the best to ever play the game at that time.
Well, you know what? I honestly believe that if Trent Green was there, he could have easily gotten that ball to Haz Hakeem and to Isaac Bruce and to Torrey Holt and to Marshall Faulk without any difficulty.
Stop. You're saying Haz Hakeem is the reason that
I'm saying Torrey Holt.
Torrey Holt's a fine player who's not a Hall of Famer.
Torrey Holt is a Hall of Famer.
Is he in the Hall of Fame?
He's going to get there eventually. There's a big backlog at receiver.
There's a bigger backlog at quarterback. Donovan McNabb's not at the top of that list, man.
I don't know, man. I would put him in there.
I have no issue with Kurt Warner being in the Hall of Fame. Here's the thing. I fall somewhere in the middle of the two of you guys because that just popped up out of nowhere.
Of all the roles, I am pro Kurt Warner, and he is banging the drum for Donald McNabb.
Yeah, I did not envision any of that happening, to be sure.
It's radio magic.
But here's the thing. So I would agree with both the points you're making to a certain extent, but I side more with Beasley because I think Warner belongs to the Hall of Fame. He was excellent for a number of years. And then, yeah, he had that dip in the career with the Giants, but then he came back with the Cardinals and took another team to the Super Bowl. So, I have no issue with Kurt Warner being in the Hall of Fame. Getting back to Donovan McNabb, I still think that he belongs to the Hall of Fame as well. But I also can acknowledge the reality that he's got an uphill battle to get there.
Well, and every year or two, another great quarterback retires.
Right.
And he is, for him to get in, it's going to have to be one of these legends votes, I think. I don't think the writers are going to vote him in. I think what do they call that committee?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
The morons?
The morons.
No, it's not the legends committee, but I know what you're talking about.
No, the legends committee is different. I'm talking about the writers.
Okay. Just a quick recap of Kurt Warner's career.
Oh, here we go.
Two-time NFL passing touchdowns leader, 1999-2001. Two-time NFL passing Raider leader, 1999-2001. NFL passing yards leader, 2001. Three-time NFL completion percentage leader, 1999-2001. Two-time first team. If you're a two-time first team All-Pro, you are a Hall of Famer.
Hey, because from 1999 to 2001, absolutely.
And then he came back with the Cardinals. He was still decent after that, and he wasn't god-awful. Like, he wasn't god-awful with the Giants.
Yes, he was.
He was on a bad team.
Look at those numbers. He was on a bad team with Tiki Barber and Amani Coomer and Jeremy Shockey. That's a bad team.
Yes.
That's a bad team.
Those are some nice names.
But that team was also a playoff team when Eli Manning
4-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl MVP, NFL MVP, Walter Payton Man of the Year. Dude, that's a Hall of Famer, man.
Walter Payton, Man of the Year. I can't even like fight that because it's true. He has like this incredible narrative. Yes, he worked at the Hy-Vee. He bounced around. Yes, I got all that. Great man, wonderful human being, no doubt about it. But on the field, you're basically telling me because of what he did for 3 years and then two towards the back end of his career, again, with skill position players that almost all of them could go to the Hall of Fame with the exception of maybe one.
Okay, is Barry Sanders a Hall of Famer?
Absolutely.
He had a very short career, too.
Absolutely not. Not 2 years.
It wasn't 2 years. I mean, you're moving the goalposts here. It was not 2 years.
Okay, he had 5 good years and a 10-year career.
It's the senior committee, I believe.
Yeah, old people.
Yeah. So I try to bring some normalcy here. We got some text rolling in here.
When I am a voter someday in 30 years, Tom McNabb's not getting my vote.
Man, our buddy Fallen Poultry says, did y'all talk about McNabb going to the Hall of Fame? I think he deserves to go in my humble opinion. Somebody else says, went to the Super Bowl in Arizona in reference to Kurt Warner. Somebody else, Kurt Warner probably had the best timing since Johnny Unitas.
Johnny Unitas could spin it, man.
Yeah. I think Kurt Warner, I'm not as passionate about it as the two of you are.
He owns three of the top five highest single-game passing yardage totals in Super Bowl history. So he had three of the most five productive. I'm sorry. That's a Hall of Famer. The Super Bowl, you have to play your best at the most important time, and he was phenomenal in those games.
And he was an MVP, right?
NFL MVP, of course.
Right. So, that's part of it, too. You could make an argument if you win MVP and then we never hear from you again, it's like, okay, it's like a one-hit wonder. But anybody who has a sustained career and who was an MVP at one point, in that sport is likely a Hall of Fame.
Correct.
Unless there's just some huge drop.
There's no doubt in my mind that Kurt Warner's had a better career than Eli Manning. And Eli Manning is going to go to the Hall of Fame. He is. Two-time Super Bowl MVP, you're going to the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Only, I mean, there's really only one quarterback who hasn't gone to the Hall of Fame that has won two Super Bowls.
And that is?
Jim Plunkett.
I've interviewed Jim Plunkett.
How was that?
It was 25 years ago, so I don't really have a vivid memory of it. But I think because both of his parents were disabled. Not sure if blind or deaf. And I know those are two totally different disabilities. But he was rallying for support toward those causes, and that's why it was available.
Gotcha. Okay. Can we switch gears here?
I want to bang on the drum some more for Kurt Warner. That guy was awesome, man.
I know is that at one point in the middle of his career, nobody was putting him in the Hall of Fame, and you were included in that list.
And then his career continued.
And then he ran into two skill position players at the prime of his career again, and all of a sudden he's great,
dude.
Okay. I want to talk some Dolphins with you because we've been teasing this for a while.
Speaking of people not in the Hall of Fame,
any members of the current Dolphins?
Correct.
Yes. So just overall takeaways from the offseason workout program, because I know a lot of attention has been paid to the quarterback position. We can certainly discuss that. But just in general, now that you've had some time to be around Brian Flores, the new coaching staff, this new team. I know that the coaching staff isn't all that accessible because of the rules and all that, but what's the overall vibe you've gotten as we now hit this break before training camp rolls around?
You want to talk that now or you want to do it after the break?
We have short breaks here, so let's get into this now.
Serious. Accountability. Attention to detail. What is the slogan, TNT takes no talent? They're going to put that to the test, I feel like, because they're going to have to make up for a deficiency in talent with a surplus of attention to detail. Look, this is one of the most penalized teams in the NFL for years now, it feels like. And I'm not one of those who believes it's totally a reflection of the coach's, laissez-faire attitude. Although when you do have a coach that tells his team he has two rules, be on time and work hard, they're going to find some gray space in those rules, like your offensive coordinator doing illicit substances on the desk while filming a hooker. Yeah. That's not going to happen here. Flores is going to run a much tighter ship, and I think that's a correction that was needed. But it's weird, Greg. I don't have a feel for this team yet, and I probably won't have a feel for this team until a month into the season, because in the month of the season, we'll have an idea what the quarterback situation looks like. If the season began today, which it doesn't, we have 3 months more of preparation. Well, 2 months and a month of vacation, but there's a while to go to the season starts. It would be Ryan Fitzpatrick's job to lose. But the thing is about Ryan Fitzpatrick, he often does. Like, he has these opportunities, and then he'll go throw five picks in a game. And so we're going to see both quarterbacks. The only way we don't see both quarterbacks is if Rosen comes in and lights it up. Because even if Fitzpatrick's really good, there's the assumption that at some point he'll revert to the mean. And I still don't think the team is going to be good enough for the Dolphins to say, okay, we're 3-5 at the midway point. The playoffs are a pipe dream. We're going to stick with the veteran, not knowing what we have in the rookie. So that's why I think Rosen will play. But it's weird, man. I think that there's areas of this team that are really good. I think their running backs have a chance of being really good. I think their secondary has a chance of being pretty good. They have to find out who their corner is going to be opposite Xavien, but they got some players there, particularly if Rashad Jones stays on the team. Problem is the trenches. They said they were going to fix the trenches. This is the offseason. They were going to really build from the inside out. And do you see it?
No, especially not on the defensive side of the ball.
No. I mean, they used their first-round pick
right on
Christian Wilkins, but he's a defensive tackle who's going to probably be a rotational player. He's not going to play 65 snaps a game. And he plays at a position that doesn't have a whole ton of impact. Now, I know the Patriots' belief is that if you create pressure up the middle, it's more effective than off the edge. But is he that guy? Is he Warren Sapp? I don't know. I mean, I think he's a fine player. I don't know if he's going to be that. I'm sure they'd be thrilled if he is, but if more teams thought he were that, he wouldn't be a 13th pick. He'd be the 3 pick or the 4 pick or whatever you ever want to say. So, yeah, I think they're going to have problems on both sides of the football in the trenches. And it's kind of sad to me that if they don't get that fixed, this was the 1 year you could have gotten that fixed because there aren't expectations to win. Instead, they kind of took a bunch of long shots and going to see if any of them come in. But there's a lot of work to do on this roster still going into 2020, even if you get your quarterback, that if you don't get that those lines better, they're not going to be very good.
I want to talk more about the quarterback position when we come back, because that's obviously the hot topic that everybody is discussing. And I want to get your thoughts on if Fitzpatrick is going to be the starter day one, what that means for Josh Rosen. You already said that Rosen's going to play, but will we already know at that point the fate of Josh Rosen in terms of his long-term standing with the team? We'll get into that next here on QAM.
Is Nirvana a Hall of Famer? Because they had a very short career, but for a while they were the best band on the planet.
Yes,
they're in. I mean, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But
well, you know, I would classify Nirvana as like a Gale Sayers or a Terrell Davis. You know, they shone really bright for a short period of time. Then injury took them out of the game.
Well, I mean,
but apparently, just to play devil's advocate, that does not apply to Kurt Warner in your mind, then.
Because Warner got hurt too, didn't he?
I think about 1 year, maybe.
I do like one of our texters did say this earlier, which I thought was pretty funny. It says, anyone that's bagging groceries and goes to 2 Super Bowls should be in the Hall of Fame.
And listen, just to clarify my point, I don't disagree that he should be, that he's in the Hall of Fame. Like, I don't contest the point. I'm just saying he shouldn't be held in such immediate, unquestioning reverence.
Okay.
I would argue that he helped revolutionize the NFL, but cool.
Fair enough.
That's Adam Beasley, Danny G the Sports Bomber, Greg Likens here with you on this Tuesday night. Hope everybody is having a good one. We're having some fun. Nothing like a good little debate to get everybody
over
going here.
Total mindless stuff, man. I mean, the odds of either of the three of us ever having any say in the Hall of Fame is so small.
Well, you're on the track to potentially be that guy.
Yeah,
of the three of us.
Armando's the voter now.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do it for another 20 years.
Because he took over from Edwin Pope?
Correct.
Right. And Edwin Pope did it for a very long time.
Very long time.
Yes.
And then I got to hope that, like, Dave High's no longer in the picture or somebody.
Right.
You know? Well, I like my chances against Perk. I could take Omar.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe Shad, maybe. But if Dave High's in the equation, forget about it.
He's got some years on you in terms of
gravitas, too.
Yes. Yes.
I got to say, no disrespect to Armando, but he does not have the same pull that Edwin Pope did when it comes to the Hall of Fame pull.
Wow, taking shots at my colleague.
I mean, let's be honest. Pope got Bob Greasy into the Hall of Fame, and Armando's having trouble just getting Zach Thomas on the ballot at this point.
Well, I think Zach Thomas is having trouble getting Zach Thomas on the ballot.
Even though his stats are almost identical to Brian Urlacher.
Yeah, like, let's be honest. It's ridiculous that he hasn't advanced further in the proceedings. Because, like, seriously, like, if you look...
Okay, let's put that to the standard that I applied. Was he one of the best two or three players at his position over the course of a decade? I would say
yes.
No.
Yes. Mm. He was in the top three with Ray Lewis and Brian Urlacher easily.
Tackles are fraudulent stats.
Because tackles, sacks, Pro Bowls, interceptions, turnovers. Let's put it all out there.
Tackles are a fraudulent stat because if you tackle a guy 9 yards down the field, it's the same as if you tackle a guy in the backfield.
Tackles for losses, whatever you want. Take any one of those stats.
He's another guy that's in the Hall of Very Good. And I love the guy.
Listen to this, though. Just listen to this.
Okay.
So if you look at Urlacher and Thomas, again, Urlacher was a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
Urlacher played 182 games, Thomas 184. Mm-hmm. So we have pretty much the same sample size. Urlacher had 1,358 tackles.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Thomas, 1,733.
Mm-hmm.
Urlacher, 8 Pro Bowls. Thomas, 7 Pro Bowls. Urlacher, 4-time first-team All-Pro. Thomas, 5-time first-team All-Pro. Urlacher did have 41.5 sacks versus 20.5 for Thomas. 12 forced fumbles for Urlacher versus 9 for Thomas. 22 interceptions for Urlacher, 17 for Thomas. And 4 touchdowns for Thomas versus 2 for Urlacher. The bottom line is there's not a huge distinction there.
Agreed. And so do I think Brian Urlacher was overhyped? Yes.
So my point is, like, Urlacher is a first ballot Hall of Famer, and Zach Thomas hasn't even been a finalist
Correct.
Yet. So like that's where I don't understand. Like, if you don't think Zach Thomas is a Hall of Fame, that's fine.
You know why? And again, I love Zach, and I think he's a great player. How many Defensive Player of the Years did he win? How many Super Bowls did he play in? How many playoff games did he win? That stuff matters, too.
It does matter. But my point is that based on the voting, there is this massive divide between these two players. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying Zach Thomas...
Are you saying they're anti-short?
...should be into the Hall of Fame, like, immediately. But my point is, how does Zach Thomas excluded from even being really in the mix for the Hall of Fame?
Well, he's been a semifinalist.
But still, that guy...
A finalist is really hard, Greg.
I suppose, but... You're telling me... Anybody who watched football during that same era... And saw the production.
Very good player.
I'm sorry. I have to go great player. I mean, the guy was a missile on the field. And mind you, he played in one of the last classes of football where, like, hitting with the head was mm-hmm. an acceptable thing. And that definitely, I think, kind of plays into kind of his role and how his game might be viewed in the context of today's NFL. But, I mean, I got to be honest with you, man. The guy was one of the best middle linebackers, top three in his position. You're talking when he played, you're talking Ray Lewis. You're talking Brian Urlacher, you're talking Zach Thomas, and who else? Who during that era? Can you name another middle linebacker that's in that class?
I'll have to go back and look.
But those are arguably the top three.
Yeah.
And the other two are like shoo-ins. So, that's my issue. Again, if you're going to say that Zach Thomas didn't do enough in the postseason, he didn't win a big award and all this other stuff, that's fair. But the fact that he can't even get further along in the process.
Getting back to the original point, I don't think you can – the way it works, I don't think you can lay that on Mondo, because really the hometown rag really makes the pitch for it when they get in the room, and that's the finalist. So there are – I don't know how many voters there are, 40-some-odd voters. The majority of those voters – agree with me and not with you. So it's not like it's Armando failing.
Correct.
I know. I'm just throwing spice on it.
Now, I got this excerpt from NFL.com. They did like a list in January, I think it was, when, you know, we're coming up on the time where we're going to reveal mm-hmm. the votes, like the biggest snubs or guys from each team that, you know, deserved recognition that hadn't gotten in. They said this. I'm going to read it verbatim. It says, most players who were first team All-Pro 5 times in recent decades are considered shoo-ins for the Hall of Fame, yet there are many players who currently reside in Canton and can't even claim 3 or 4, much less the 5 Thomas earned during a stellar 13-year career. For example, Michael Strahan, Warren Sapp, Nora Neas Williams own that many first team All-Pro accolades. Jason Taylor, who made it in last year, was named All-Pro 3 times. Ah, but he has a sack numbers. Unfortunately, that's what voters, and to a larger extent the youth movement in the voters' room, look for. Sacks jump off the page. Steady middle linebackers win games. The 3 best pure Mike linebackers the last 20 years were Ray Lewis, Brian Urlacher, and Thomas. You know what the first 2 have in common. So that's from NFL.com.
I would also throw in the fact that if I remember correctly, Tom Brady gave a very ringing endorsement to Jason Taylor, and that's what put him over the top, if I recall.
Well, I mean,
I don't know if it put him over the top, but it helped.
Yeah. I mean, Ken Norton was in that era. He was really good.
Ken Norton was an era before him, though. That was the early 90s with the Cowboys and the Niners.
No, he played until 2000, man.
Yeah, but his best years were in the early 90s and early to mid-90s.
And when did Zach get in the league?
He got in there about 96, 97.
Was it that late?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he played 13 years.
Yeah, believe me, my wet dream is to have the Dolphins offense from the early 90s with the defense from the late 90s. That's my wet dream team that will never exist.
All right, well, I'll just tell you this, and I think we have – obviously there's some good points made about all pros. That is strong in his defense. But getting outside our bubble a little bit – and not saying that they're the definitive source, but Athlon Sports lists the 25 best middle linebackers of all time. He's not one of those 25 names. I mean,
and so if you're applying that logic to a Hall of Fame, then yes,
it's hard.
Points well taken.
It's hard.
Okay, So we're going to switch gears here for a second. And let's try not to put Beasley in a position where we're ripping his coworkers.
Yeah, let's try not to do that again.
I was trying to throw some spice on the conversation.
Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line 56022. I want to read a few texts, and I want to ask you about the quarterback position for the Dolphins. One of our texters says, don't forget one of the best Syracusians ever to play the game, the great Larry Zonka.
Oh, yes.
No doubt about that.
That is a Hall of Famer right there.
Yes. And our buddy Fallen Poultry says, according to Wikipedia, Donovan McNabb led NFL in quarterback wins from 2000 to 2004 and ranked fourth during his 13-year career in quarterback wins behind only Peyton, Brady, and Favre. McNabb is a Hall of Famer. That's another opinion
we're
there.
We're using quarterback stats as the barometer now? Quarterback wins as the barometer?
According to one of our texts.
Okay.
There. Yes.
It's good to know.
Okay. Speaking of quarterbacks.
You know who was in two AFC championship games? Mark Sanchez.
That he was.
So,
yeah.
Quarterback wins for the win.
And Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, Trent Dilfer was good compared to Mark Sanchez, man.
Oh, fair enough. But yeah, I always get mad at the thought of Trent Dilfer. Like, I remember when he was on ESPN, and like one time in particular, he basically started talking down about Dan Marino because he hadn't won a Super Bowl.
Oh, God.
And I was like, oh, my gosh.
Oh, God.
Like, where do you get off doing that?
Who's the worst quarterback to ever, like, in the modern era to appear in a Super Bowl? It has to be.
If it's not him, then it would be Brad Johnson, maybe?
It's a competition between
not
Brad
winning it,
Johnson.
Appearing.
Oh, appearing.
Oh, just
Rex
appearing?
Grossman?
Rex Grossman's the one I was going for.
Yeah.
How about Mark Rippon?
That's not the modern era, though, is it? That was like 89.
91.
91.
Yeah, I mean, Rex Grossman is one of the guys who instantly pops into my head when you ask that question. Okay, so
do you take Grossman or Dilfer?
I mean, Dilfer got it done, baby.
Dilfer won. Yeah. So, if Josh Rosen is not the starter opening day, which it appears, at least right now from what we know, that it appears it's trending in that direction.
Strong possibility.
Yes. So if that's the case, I've made the argument before that if that happens, then the Dolphins already know that they need to go draft a quarterback in the first round next year. Is that unfair, or do we need to give him time to play?
Wow.
Yeah, because like if Ryan Fitzpatrick beats out Josh Rosen for the starting job, then he's going to be 30.
Oh, I thought you meant as of today.
No, but like
from what we've seen already, you're ready to pull the plug.
No, day one of the regular season.
Okay, all right.
So if Ryan Fitzpatrick
I see what you're saying
is
now.
The starter and he ultimately wins the job over Josh Rosen, you know, good for him. But does that automatically tell the Dolphins as an organization Josh Rosen doesn't have the goods? Or do you think that we need to exhibit more patience?
Is this a crappy radio tease? Or are we doing? Are we answering this question?
Yeah, I want to know.
No, I don't think so. I think that it would be hard for them to swallow to start Ryan Fitzpatrick to start the season because it would mean that they're not even close. Because if they're close, Rosen's going to play. Let's not kid ourselves.
Right.
But we don't know. They want to see him in a game. So if he plays 11 games and goes 9-2. Yeah, he's going to be their quarterback next year. There's no easy way out for Josh aside from just being awesome this year.
Yeah,
it's really hard because he came in late, so he's behind. I will say this: we collectively, including myself, have made way too big of a deal as to what we've seen in the spring. When's the last time you saw something in the spring and it was at all applicable to October?
Rarely.
Very rarely.
Devontae Parker is a great example.
100%. 100%.
So is Charles Harris, actually, right?
So let's let this play out. Let's get to August. Let's get to late August. And if Rosen's still far behind, he'll be their backup in 2020 and 2021 when they draft a new quarterback. But based on what I know about the guy and his ability and his intelligence, I think that gap's going to close in August, and I think if he isn't the starter week one, it'll be pretty early in the season.
Okay, which is good to hear. You got a big piece that's going to be released tomorrow.
It's true.
On Josh Rosen.
Very true.
Yes. In the Miami Herald. It'll be in the paper tomorrow?
No. No, I'm going to make you buy the Sunday newspaper.
The Sunday newspaper.
It's more expensive.
Got
it. But it will be online, so I hope you haven't used up all your free clicks. If not, buy that subscription. I spent a week in California. I met with a ton of people, former teammates, both on the high school and collegiate level. I met with his high school coach. I met with his interim head coach and offensive coordinator his junior year at UCLA, a name that might be familiar to Miami fans, Miami Hurricanes fans, Jed Fish. And I met with his youth tennis coach, which is like, why are you hunting down a guy that coached him 12 years ago, 13 years ago? Well, that's why you need to read the story. But there are a lot of the, I think I, debunk's not the right word, but I shed new light on a lot of the narratives surrounding Josh. And there's no doubt he's got a different personality. And there's no doubt he's brought a lot of this heat on himself. But there's also no doubt that it's been overblown. And the players I talked to, including ones that weren't set up that I just happened to go and chat with them, all swear by him as a teammate. So the idea that he's going to be some sort of pariah, some sort of cancer, not true. Is he good enough to be an NFL quarterback? The jury's still out on that. But a lot of this other baggage, I think, is overblown. Are there some personality quirks with Josh? Yes, we've already seen them both from afar and near. But if he can spin it, nobody cares. Nobody cares at all.
That's for sure. So check that out. Herald.com tomorrow.
Correct.
And then Sunday's paper.
Yeah, and if you're really feeling charitable, buy a subscription. That'd be great.
There we go.
Or at least a copy of the paper on Sunday.
Fair enough. That would be a nice little happy medium there for everybody. Bees, let's take a quick time out. We'll come back, kick off the 9 o'clock hour right after this.